What the heck is insulin resistance? Why should you care about it? And why is it becoming this huge epidemic in our society that most people don't even know about? It's very confusing. So stay tuned if you want to answer all of these questions and learn a ton about insulin resistance, fat burning, stabilizing your blood sugar, managing stress, which exercise is best for your blood sugar, and so much more. I have an amazing interview coming up, so stay tuned. I'm Dani Hamilton, and you're listening to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. Our blood sugar affects how we feel at every second of the day and also has huge impacts on our long-term health. In this show, I'll help you understand more about your blood sugar and give you practical tips to help you gain more energy, have better sleep, crush cravings, have clear skin, happy moods, burn fat, and so much more. This show is about taking action and taking your health destiny into your own hands. Are you ready to feel better? Let's do it. Hey everyone, it's Dani and welcome back to Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. I am so grateful you are joining me today. If this is your first show, welcome. I'm so grateful that you chose this podcast. There's so many good podcasts out there and it really means so much to me that you are checking this one out or coming back again for another episode. And I'm so excited to dive into today's interview with Olivia Roberge. But before we do that, I just wanted to tell you some exciting news. My signature group coaching course, Blood Sugar Mastery, which I'm sure you know a little bit about if you have been here for some time. It is back again for the 9th round of this incredible transformative program, and enrollment is opening on March 21st, 2022. And if you want to join the waitlist because you'd like to learn more about it, you can click on the link in the show notes where you can get on the VIP waitlist, where you will be the first to be informed when the program is opening for enrollment, and also be eligible to get special promotions like a supplement protocol and discounts off the program. And you will also be guaranteed a space if you sign up for a 15-minute call with me. So click on that link in the show notes to get on the waitlist, but also scroll down and you'll see a calendar where you can book a call with me. And so if you do that, you can learn if the program is right for you. You can see the inside of the program and learn what it's all about, who it's for, if you're a good candidate. And if so, you will be automatically eligible for early enrollment because I'm going to limit spaces this round. I want to make sure that everyone is getting an excellent personalized experience in the program. So I want to make sure that I'm leaving enough space so that everyone can get a great value and experience in the program. And anyone who doesn't get a chance to sign up will be eligible to join the next cohort, which will be starting in the summer. So it's going to be once a quarter, this program. So we just had our winter cohort. We are going to have our spring one starting in March and then probably again in June. So if you can't get in this round, you will be able to get in June, but I'm hoping that everyone who wants to sign up will be able to get in. So if you know that you want a spot, if you know that you missed out last time, I told you all, if you've been listening to the show, to take note of where your progress is in starting in January when it was the new year and everyone was all gung-ho about the resolutions, right? And I said, just take note, if you don't join the program by early March, I said for my birthday on March 3rd, which was when the last day of the program, I said, take note of if you feel like you have experienced all the changes and sort of got that motivation and got down this rhythm of where you want to be by, you know, 3 months from that time. And so if that was you, if you heard that, I want you to kind of go back to your mind in January and say, where was I then? Am I on the right path where I want to be now? Am I crushing it, killing my goals? Or am I still sort of in this same cycle of trying something, it fails, I think I'm a failure, or I'm too perfectionistic about it, and I kind of go back to what I know. That's what I hear a lot of times from a lot of my students who have said, you know, I've tried this in the past, and I keep trying and I'm trying and trying, and I never seem to move forward because every time I take a few steps forward, something happens, and then I take 3 steps back, and I'm back to where I started from. So If that's the case, then this program is going to be an amazing godsend for you because we have so many coaching calls where we go over all of this mindset work that we really need to start changing in order to have success with our health, right? So many of us have so many perfectionistic tendencies, myself included. I'm a for sure recovering perfectionist. And we have this when it comes to our health. And we think that I need to do things perfectly, or if not, then I'm a failure, or if not, it's not working and I'm just going to go back to what I know. And so many of us also, another common pattern I see with my students is that they tend to know all the things that they want to change. And so they're like, I'm going to start keto. I'm going to cook all my meals from home. I'm going to start going to the gym. I'm going to meditate for 20 minutes every day. And guess what? That's way too many changes to make in at one time. And inevitably, the person can't keep up with all of those huge amounts of changes. And in a matter of a few weeks, it becomes too much and they backslide and go back to what they knew. So this is what we try to prevent in the program. We try during the program, I have a blood sugar diet roadmap. And this roadmap takes you step by step into what you need to change next without biting off more than you can chew, right? We want to make these slow, sustainable lifestyle changes because this program is not about crash dieting. You know that my whole philosophy is about eating healthy, living healthy, and having that be a lifestyle. So it can be something that you do just on the regular. It's your default way of living becomes a healthy way of living that supports what you want to do with your life. So with my life, I want to have a lot of energy. I want to have energy and be in a good mood so I can do all the things I want to do. If I'm tired, if I didn't get enough sleep, if I'm feeling cranky because my blood sugar is crashing, which is very rare for me now, or if I ate something that doesn't really sit well with me and my stomach's kind of bothering me, or I get a headache, or it makes my mood low, that's the worst for me. I can't stand that. And it prevents me from doing what I want to do, which a lot of it has to do with working and delivering content to you all. So if I'm not in a good mood, it's hard for me to get on and podcast or show my face on Instagram. And that's how I make a living. And that's what I like to do. I love to help other people. That really fulfills me. And I also love to get outside. I love to be active. I love to go to the gym and work out. And if my adrenals are not there because I haven't been sleeping, I've been working too much, I can't do what I want to do, and that's not how I want to live my life. So I prioritize how I want to feel all the time. So in Blood Sugar Mastery, we help you tap into what you really want your life to look like, what your why is, and what you want to experience every day. And then we help you devise a plan that will slowly get you there over time in a way that you're not going to be backsliding. You're not going to be falling off the wagon and staying off the wagon. You're going to be learning from mistakes you make, and you're going to be using that information to propel you forward. And a lot of what we talk about in the program, and that's really been coming up over the last few cohorts, and my students will agree with me on this, is that so much of what we talk about on these calls is not exactly what to eat, but exactly how we can frame things in our mind so we aren't setting ourselves up for this perfectionistic type of view on things. And so that if we do make a mistake, we don't have this shame and blame towards ourselves, and we can sort of get right back on that horse. So anyway, I'm blabbing. I'm really, really excited about this next cohort to join Blood Sugar Mastery. This program is life-changing, and I have so many amazing testimonials to share with you. So I'm going to share with you a quick one right now. And this one is from Lori, and Lori is one of my past students. She did an incredible job in the program. She got off 3 medications. She got into ketosis very early on. She lost 10 pounds in the program. She added a lot of different lifestyle changes in the program to support her sleep, which facilitated her falling asleep before midnight finally. She said her nails look fabulous. She met some other amazing people on this journey. And most importantly, she said, I feel a sense of control finally over my former self-destructive eating habits, and I'm less scared knowing I will have guidance going forward. So Lori has experienced so many positive wins from the program, and I'll share another quick one from one of my other students. She said, I just wanted to say thank you for everything. I had to slow my pace and take it easy throughout, as my reactive hypoglycemia didn't like the initial changes I made. But I have finally found my rhythm and managed to overhaul my diet and have been gluten, dairy, and egg free for a couple weeks, and it has helped me so much. I have reduced stomach pain and bloating, more energy, better blood sugar regulation, and better mood have been the side effects, and this has felt amazing. I'm still working through the modules and nowhere near complete yet, but have learned and achieved so much since coaching started, and I will always continue on. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So that was from Siobhan, and thank you for sharing that review and testimonial with us. And I'm so excited to have this next group. So again, go to the show notes, click on the link that is if you wanted to know what the link is, DanielleHamiltonHealth.com/blood-sugar-mastery. And that will take you to the waitlist page where you can also book that call to get early access to the program, but also to find out if this is a good fit for you and to ask me your questions you have about the program, because I'm not accepting just anyone. I just want to make sure that it's a really great fit for you, because I want this to be worth it. And I really take only students who are very driven and really ready to make changes. So you might be thinking, I don't want to be pre-diabetic anymore, or I want my blood sugar to stop crashing, but you know, am I going to have to give up certain foods? I want you to know that you're ready to make these changes, right? So if you're not quite there yet, this program is not for you. But if you are saying, I know that I need to make changes and I'm ready and willing to get uncomfortable, because living where I am right now with my current state of my health is way more uncomfortable than the thought of changing, then this program is for you. All right, so let's jump into today's episode with Olivia. She is also known as Health Coach Liv on Instagram. She is a third-year naturopathic medicine student and certified primal health coach that specializes in improving women's metabolic health so that they have better energy, fewer cravings, and more effortless control of their weight and relationship with food. Her passion for this field was ignited with her own health journey when she went from struggling to stay awake following conventional dietary advice to feeling energized and focused all day by switching foods to metabolic hormones. She now works with clients one-on-one and is soon offering a self-paced online course to help guide other women through understanding their metabolism and experiencing their own transformation. In this episode, you are going to hear all about insulin resistance and what the heck that actually means and why you should care about it, how and why you want to become fat adapted, what happens to our adrenals and our cortisol levels when we are sugar burners, the effect of snacking and grazing on our blood sugar, insulin, and metabolism, the effect of small frequent meals versus big meals and which ones might be right for you, how to stop snacking effortlessly, wouldn't that be great to know, effects of trying the Diabetes Canada proposed meal plan on her blood sugar. So she did a sample meal plan from them and tested her blood sugar on a CGM, and she shares the results of that. It's crazy. What types of exercises burn fat versus burn glucose, her exercise pyramid, how stress impacts blood glucose and insulin, and areas of stress reduction and management. So this is an amazing episode and interview. I'm so excited that you're going to be listening. So here is Liv, the health coach. Okay. All right, everyone. I'm here with Liv, the health coach, aka Olivia Roberge. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you. I hope I said your name right.
Close enough. Yeah. Okay. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. So you are on Instagram and you talk about, I was telling you this off air, that I love your content and you speak all about insulin resistance, and it's always the content. Every time I see it, I was like, oh, I wish I could have said that. And I'm so glad that there's someone out there
making these graphics and speaking about this complex topic that is so prevalent in our society that so few people understand and know about. Mm-hmm. So tell us about your story. How did you get into health? What piqued your interest with metabolism and insulin resistance? Let's start there.
Okay. we'll go back to kind of the beginning. So I've always been an athlete like my whole life. And so food was just like, food is fuel, food is energy. Like, that's all I care about. As long as I'm getting enough and then burning it off, like, whatever. So in university, I was a varsity athlete. And so we'd have like 2 hour practices almost every day and like weightlifting, you know, 3 to 4 times a week. So it's like, oh, the exercise was on point. And like, thank God, because my like relationship with food was like pretty terrible. So the first couple years of university was like, oh, like I'm an athlete, but like, I don't want to be bulky, you know, like I want to be like slim and lean, like the track stars. So like me and my little friends, we'd be like calorie counting and then like hitting up like the treadmill to like burn off a certain amount of calories. Cause you know, we thought that was what you did. It was all calories in, calories out, everything low fat. But basically like I was always hungry. I was always like, oh, I could eat this, I could eat that. And then my calorie counting would last for like a week or two. And then obviously I just like go crazy on whatever. and then it would be like, okay, well I was bad. So now I had to go back to the calorie counting. And it was just like that whole cycle for probably like the first 3 years. And then I realized, I was like, you know what? Like, I just don't have the willpower or like the discipline to do the calorie counting. Like I'm never going to be that person. So I'm not going to focus on that anymore. I'm just going to listen to my body, like intuitive eat basically before it was a thing. And I'm just going to fuel my body and focus on being an athlete and being strong, which is all great, but like, it didn't like just turn into, oh, okay, now I'm moderating my food and I'm just eating like, I don't know, like then I just started eating like all the same stuff. I was just giving myself permission. So like, if I wanted Popeyes, I would get Popeyes. If I wanted Taco Bell, like then I would get Taco Bell, or like a whole extra large pizza to myself. Like, who cares? Like, I'm an athlete. Like, I'm gonna fuel my body and that's all fine. Mm-hmm. But then, so nearing the end of university, I was like, okay, like this is, I was like taking a look at myself because I was about to graduate and being like, okay, well, this is me in my peak health, obviously, because I'm working out all the time. I'm like fueling my body. So this is probably like the best it's ever going to get. And meanwhile, like my energy was terrible. Like I was always taking naps. The only reason I started drinking coffee was because of like the energy crashes in the afternoon. I always had to have a dessert. Like even after my lunch, I was like, I need to have something sweet or else like my meal is not done. And I was just like constantly snacking, constantly eating. There's a lot of like secret eating, kind of like, oh, my roommates aren't here this weekend. Like, okay, let's have fun all by myself. And so by the end of university, like, I don't really care so much about like the number, like the number on the scale or like the number of like my pant size or whatever. But each year I was getting pants, it was like steadily increasing. And I was like, okay, like maybe that's not a great sign. Like that's not a great trend. And so when I was graduating, I was honestly pretty terrified that like, okay, everything is trending in like the wrong direction. And now I'm not going to have that exercise to kind of like force me to burn everything off. And I don't know what I'm doing with my food. Like something is not working.
Yeah.
So I need to like figure this nutrition thing out. And then I wish I remembered why I picked up this book, but I picked up the China Study. If you know that book, it's like by that vegan doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I read that and I was like, oh, like this is what's happening. Like it's the animal products and the fat. Like I'm so dumb. I just need to cut all of this out. And I found the solution. So I was like, perfect. Like oh, no. I'm set. So then I was vegan for a year. And that was okay. Cause I was like eating more whole food. So I was like, okay, like, you know what? Even if, you know, the energy's not great and like the weight's not really shifting. Like, at least I know I'm doing this for my long-term health. Like I'm going to be healthy in the long term if I eat this way. So I was like, okay, like I feel really good about what I'm doing. And so I even started this other university program to become a dietitian because I was going to be a vegan dietitian and then like become a vegan like doctor. And I was like,
oh man.
But then during the first semester of that, like, that dietetics program. So I'm like, rah, rah, like veganism, like animal products are the worst. And, you know, we should go as low fat as possible. I randomly hear this clip of the Joe Rogan podcast. And one of his guests is like, well, we know that like the cholesterol you eat doesn't really affect the cholesterol in your blood. And like, I was like, that can't be true because that's not what my book said. Like, so, and I was like, I'm going to prove this wrong. So then I start going down like the rabbit hole and then I like get introduced to like Gary Taubes and the Nina Teicholz and then Jason Fung. And I read the obesity code and the diabetes code. And I'm like, oh, like this makes sense.
This
makes
feels a lot really
more sense.
Way more compelling. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. But like the like cognitive dissonance was so strong. And I was like, this makes sense, but like, I know it's not right. Like it can't be right. Everyone's telling me like plants are better. So like, I have to go this way. But then I was like, you know what, why don't I experiment with this for 2 weeks? And then when I feel really, really terrible at the end, like I'll just switch back and, you know, no harm, no foul. And then like,
wow.
2 weeks later, like I had nights where I forgot to have dessert. I forgot to have that afternoon snack. Cause I was just like focusing on my work. Like, I like started going to the bathroom regularly for the first time in my life. Like, whereas before it would be like once every 3 days, like, what else? Like, yeah, I didn't need any naps. Like the whole day I was just like, oh, I'm just sailing through my whole day. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And then, so I like kept on with that, I think like 3 months later. And I was like, oh, I was at the gym. I was like, let me just like hop on the scale and see, because like even throughout my whole like time as a varsity athlete, like my weight didn't shift like one like little inch. Like during the season, my coach would be like, oh, like wow, like you're the same weight at the beginning of season as you are at the end. And I'm like, yeah, like that's just the weight that I am. So then I hop on the scale and it's dropped like 20 pounds and I'm just like,
wow.
But this doesn't make any sense because I'm eating satisfying meals and I'm working out a lot less and like the bloat is gone. Like I'm feeling good. My energy is good. And basically like ever since then, I've just like been diving more and more into all of this stuff. And it's like, it all makes so much sense because it makes sense.
Yeah, it really does. That's such a great story of how especially that, starting with the idea that you wanted to intuitively eat when you were eating a standard American diet, you mm-hmm. obviously had some signs of blood sugar dysregulation, insulin resistance, and you were eating hyper palatable, ultra processed foods as we all did growing up, right? Who didn't? Yeah. Maybe some random person who's maybe lucky enough to be born where the parents already knew this, but the average person is eating these foods, right? And they're designed to be really addictive. They're designed to have this ratio of salt, fat, and protein, salt, fat, and sugar that really reaches this point called the bliss point where you can't put these foods down. You can't have just one. And so you try to intuitively eat when you're mm-hmm. eating addictive food with blood sugar dysregulation issues that are going to cause you to crave more of these carbohydrate rich, sugar rich foods. And you call it intuitive eating, but what you said was it was just an excuse to eat more and not try to moderate something that is a drug. Like you can't moderate addictive
yeah,
drugs,
exactly.
Right? So it's a lot of people will try to intuitively eat because they don't want the restriction of the calorie counting and always to be hungry. And there's another way. And that's what I think that people don't realize, that it's not just intuitive eating or calorie counting. Those aren't the only two options. It's when you eat that in a way that supports your metabolism and your blood sugar regulation, and you feel satiated and it's supporting your hormones in that way, it's like you said, you effortlessly stopped snacking and needing dessert and napping, and you had better focus. That's what happens when you eat a diet that really balances out those things. And then the intuitive eating becomes effortless, and it's, you can actually do it, right?
It's truly intuitive. Like it actually is intuitive.
Yeah.
I feel like that's why when I see posts, like, because I've kind of done both things, like the calorie counting and the intuitive eating, and like then focusing on my hormones, like when I see the posts about like intuitive eating and they're like, just grab that bag of chips. Like your intuition can't be wrong. I'm like, absolutely not. Like, yeah, you don't need to like shove people all the way to the other end of the spectrum, because then in a couple of years, like, are they going to be in better health? No, like they absolutely are not going to be. You're leading them down this path where they have to listen to their intuition, but their intuition is just guided by the food industry, like, you know, making these foods at the bliss point, like making them super cheap, making them super convenient. Like, what is intuitive about that? I don't understand.
Totally. And I think that we both agree, both camps agree, that people shouldn't feel shamed for eating a bag of chips, for having a craving for a bag of chips. You're not a bad person because you crave chips. Chips are made to be craved. That is
literally
why they exist. So you are just a regular person. There's nothing intuitively bad about you. You don't lack self-control. It is an addictive food, right? And pairing the blood sugar and insulin issues that most people, 88% of people have, on top of that, that's going to drive you naturally to seek out foods just like that. So should we give into that, or should we fix the reason it's occurring, right? So that's where I think we differentiate from these intuitive eating people. They say, just eat it if you're craving it. I say, why the heck are you even craving it to begin with, right? And so if you keep asking why and going deeper and deeper, there's probably some issues at the outset. And so why don't you talk about for us a little bit about people who don't really understand insulin resistance, and maybe why this would drive someone to seek out desserts at the end of the meal, not be able to lose weight, even though they're working out, be driven towards having chips and refined carbohydrates. What does insulin resistance even mean?
Yeah. So I really like to think, I like to focus on insulin and insulin resistance, because I feel like it highlights our two fuel systems in the body and kind of the difference between them, where we, a lot of the times we were brought up, if we think about just calories in, calories out, that we have this like big vat of calories in our body. But that's not really how our body functions. It has like very certain fuel systems. Just like if you had a hybrid car, you have your like gas engine and then you have a battery. So those are two fuel systems, but they're very different, and you tap into them at different times. And so what happens is when our insulin is elevated, because our tissues are insulin resistant, so we need more insulin to kind of have the same effect to push the blood sugar out of the bloodstream. When our insulin is high, its strongest effect is to shut off access to our body fat, and also to stop tissues from burning fat, because it wants our tissues to burn sugar instead. Because it's like, we don't want to have all this sugar around. It's very damaging. So if you have insulin resistance developing, then you're going to have these higher levels of insulin, often for a longer time, which means that your access to your stored energy, which you should be using, it's like a backpack, like full of granola bars, like you should be munching on that throughout the day, especially at night too. If your insulin is elevated, you don't have access to that stored energy. And so you're running on your small little fuel tank. And so obviously when that empties, and you can't use fat very well, what are you going to look for? You're going to look for those starchy snacks, those sugary snacks, those things that absorb really quickly and increase your blood sugar really quickly. And then if they increase your blood sugar really quickly, it starts that whole like blood sugar roller coaster where it dips down too much. And so you're always trying to correct your blood sugar balance with more food, or, you know, you're just crashing and you're on the couch. And so then it's no wonder that you have issues with steadily gaining weight, because you're not accessing your fat when you think you are. And so like, if you can't burn your fat, if you can't use your fat, how are you going to lose it?
Yeah, that's great. That's beautifully said. So I love the analogy of the hybrid car. I use that myself. And it's, we have to remember that fat is energy and sugar is energy. It's just put in the basic, most simplest of terms. And oftentimes I see people recognizing that they want to, that they need to lower their carbs. And so what they'll do is they'll start to lower their carbs. Maybe they'll have some more protein, but protein also can get converted to glucose because we can't store excess proteins, excess amino acids in our body. Mm-hmm. So the protein also has a mild, like, blood sugar and insulinogenic effect in the body. So there, people are trying to get off carbs. So they're lowering their only fuel source they have access to.
Yes.
And now they have no energy. They're in this state of, like, low carb purgatory because they still haven't been able to access those fat stores. So What do you think is missing for someone like that who is saying, hey, I know I need to lower my carbs because I'm eating too much sugar. So I try really hard to lower my carbs. I'm having a little bit more protein. Like, what do you see as, like, being like the likely result of someone doing that?
Yeah. Well, it's just like you said, like, you've taken away the only fuel source they had. And now, like, we have this big gap. So obviously, like, that's going to be really rough. Like, you're not going to have a good time. Mm-hmm. And so the natural thing to do would be to, you need to switch your fuel sources. So, your fat. So, what I like to do with my clients is, like, the first part of the program is all about, like, their cells recognizing the fat again, before we even get to using their own fat, because like, your mitochondria, they can kind of change the machinery that they have. And so if they haven't seen fat for years and years and years, like, they're not going to be good at burning it. Like, you're not going to be like, all of a sudden I'm so good at burning my fat. Like, they haven't practiced this for, like, decades at this point. So you need to, like, slowly, like, show them, like, okay, we're going to have fat now, and you need to be able to be better and better and better at using this as fuel. So then we can actually use our own body fat. So yeah, I find a lot of women do this too. Like, they just do, okay, well, I'm going to up my protein a little bit and, like, have it on a salad and, like, I'll lower my carbs. That's totally fine. But when you're like, okay, and so add some fat, they're like, yeah, okay.
We,
like,
still,
so a quarter of an avocado, I'm like, no, like, go for it. Like, just go overboard and then you can bring it back. But, like, your body needs to have some energy and, like, see it before you start, like, dialing it back. And it's like,
yeah,
but that, like, fear of fat is a huge, like, hurdle, I think, to get over.
It really is. I see this with my clients too, that we, you know, most of us have lived through the 80s and 90s and who are in this predicament that we're all in. And we have instilled in us this low fat, like, dogma and this very fear of fat and fear of that if we put a lot of fat on our plate, that it means that we're going to gain weight and that our cholesterol is going to get ruined. And it's just, it's so in us, just like, if I breathe in, I will be getting oxygen. If I breathe out, I'll be breathing out CO2. Like, that's how much we know. It's almost like our bodies know that as fact. And that is a irrational, you know, belief that we need to start letting go of. And I remember when I first started doing keto, I felt uncomfortable with the amount of fat on my plate. Mm. So I always say it needs to be an uncomfortable amount. And so
exactly.
it's going to make you feel uncomfortable at first.
Yeah, it
but,
is.
I mean, I don't recommend just, like, hey, go out and go ham, because a lot of people, like you said, their cells aren't going to recognize how to burn this fat. And what I work with a lot of people who have digestive issues, where your gallbladder is not going to be ready for all that fat. So we want you to slowly, incrementally raise your fats while supporting your gallbladder fat digestion. And hopefully that way your body will be able to use it better. So we want to be able to have the body recognize what fat is, get used to burning it so that we can become fat adapted, right? So can you tell us a little bit more about what that's like, that experience of being able to burn your own body fat? What does that sort of lead us to?
Yeah. So I think in my mind, really, it's about having a seamless transition between, like, the meal you ate, whatever was in that meal, Because your body is going to be running off whatever it just had at that meal. So we have like a fed state and a fasted state. And so when you're fat adapted, what happens is that you don't have a stutter between like transitioning in the fed state, running off the energy from your meal, and then transitioning over to stored energy, whether that's stored sugar or that's stored fat. Like you can just kind of do it seamlessly and then you don't even notice. And that's when people start naturally like going longer periods without eating because they're like, oh, I just wasn't hungry. I was busy. I was doing whatever. I felt good. Whereas if you're not fat adapted, if you're not able to seamlessly transition over into your stored energy, once your body starts using up that meal, once it's like near the end, it starts sputtering because it's like where's our next hit? And that's when you get that urge to snack. That's when you get that afternoon crash, because it's kind of like maybe our insulin's too high to really access like even the glycogen or the body fat. And now we're just kind of like, the brain's like, we need something, like, let's go.
So the insulin impacts the ability for the liver to use glycogen. Is that what I'm hearing?
To break it down.
To break it down? Mm-hmm. Really? I didn't know that. And that's really interesting.
I didn't know this either, but like its effects are basically like, it has like levels, mm-hmm. like at a certain level, it'll do, be pushing the blood sugar out of the blood, mm-hmm. and then like goes down a little bit. And that's when it inhibits glycogen release. And then it goes down a little bit more. And that's when it inhibits fat storage. So as it's rising, it's like lowest level, basically like just above its lowest level. That's when it stops fat burning. So it's like, that's the first action it has, even before it affects our blood sugar.
That's incredible to know that. I mean, I talk about reactive hypoglycemia a lot, and these people are the ones who are really experiencing. I love that analogy of the engine kind of sputtering because it's not able to switch from the fed state to the fasted state. So it's not only that they can't access their fat stores, but they can't even get sugar. And that's when I say it's constant car analogies with blood sugar.
Because, it just works.
Yeah. Because what I say is that and this is such a good way of putting it, that as people are running out of the fuel that they get from being in a fed state from your previous meal, that's when, if you have high insulin levels, which are blocking the fat burning, blocking the release of the glycogen, which is stored blood sugar, then your body turns on like the gas light. So that's when the light comes on in the car and it's like, oh crap, we're running low, hurry up and get something. So for a lot of people, this might just be these little like, oh, I'm a little shaky, or maybe I have a little headache, or maybe I start to get a little irritable. Like, oh, I'm just cranky because I need to eat, or feeling a little hangry. But then these symptoms start progressing. So you're lightheaded, you're dizzy, you're shaky, you're nauseous, you're having intense headaches, intense anxiety, brain fog, difficulty concentrating, heart palpitations, sweating, these things start to get more and more intense. And that is really just that symptom. I feel that is very closely tied to these high levels of insulin. And in my case, I'm also seeing a huge, huge adrenal component with this as well, because the adrenals aren't able to keep that blood sugar up in that emergency state. So I don't know all the nitty gritty of all the hormones. I see what I see in my clinical practice, and I'm kind of putting the pieces together and making these recommendations, and they're working because we're focusing on all these different areas. But I would love to know, do you know about like how cortisol kind of fits into this and adrenal glands, or is that not something?
Well, just in general, like, if we think about it, if the brain has an energy gap, then like, if it's not getting the energy that it needs, and like you said, it sends that emergency signal. And what is that? Like, that's a huge stressor.
Yeah.
So we often think of like stressors as like psychological stressors, or like things that we're conscious of, but our body also has like internal stressors, and having that huge energy crash is a huge stressor. Because if your blood sugar goes too low, like, you can pass out, like you can literally die if it goes too low. So your body's like, we need to absolutely fix this. And I think, if you're doing that day after day after day, like for years and years, like at some point, like your body isn't able to respond as well. Like the adrenals, they're just like, we can't keep up. Or like insulin is fighting with cortisol, or it's fighting with like adrenaline, right? And maybe insulin is winning. So cortisol or adrenaline can't raise your blood sugar because insulin is saying, no, we're not breaking down the glycogen. Like we're not doing it, you know, like, so they're having this like battle.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's great. And I like how you talked about the fact that low blood sugar is a physical stressor on the body, and high blood sugar is as well. So when we have these spikes, and then that, of course, that concomitant crash, that it's just going to happen. So these highs and lows are really leading to impacts on the adrenals, which are one of the major organs of blood sugar regulation. They're blocking the liver from doing its job, which is another organ of blood sugar regulation, where it needs to, you know, have the glycogen breakdown or gluconeogenesis, all of those functions of the liver. And then it's really impactful in the whole blood sugar system. Mm-hmm. And then over time, some people, their adrenals are just so depleted that they can't keep their blood sugar up. And then other people go the other way, where if there's not as much of an adrenal component, we have these high levels of insulin. They're knocking at the door of the cells, trying to put more and more sugar in there. The cells are either filled or the receptors are like, dude, you were just here. Like, I'm not letting you in. So then we have, and then, so we have these high levels of insulin in the blood and high blood sugar levels, because we can't, even though there needs to be more and more and more insulin released to get the sugar where it needs to go. And then we see the blood sugar levels increasing. So it could be a highs, lows, it could be any sort of number of these things, but it's still coming back to the same root causes, right?
Exactly. And I just, now that I know about it, whenever I like look at what people are eating, I'm like, no, like, don't do that to your body. Like, just cause like, you just know that it's going to cause this huge like roller coaster. And even if they don't understand that it's causing stress in their body, like they just up their stress load on, like in their day, like on top of everything else that people have to deal with, on top of like a, you know, a global pandemic, like they're just like internally having this. I'm like, oh no.
Right. And I think having had a continuous glucose monitor is really telling. But one of the things that people can do is really start to just get in touch with how they feel, you know, like looking at what they had for breakfast and saying, wow, I was craving a lot of carbohydrates that day. And I was, you know, this might be people's normal. They say, I always have a crash at this time. I'm always looking for dessert, right? That was your normal. That was my normal. I had the same thing. Mm-hmm. So looking at how, what can you modify, and then modify a variable and see what that does. It's like, does this take away craving? Does this do that? So what are some other strategies? Maybe we can talk about some things people can do to start lowering the levels of insulin and not causing them to go up so much, to help to improve this ability to access the body fat and, you know, burn all our fuel sources better.
Yeah. So I think number one is a pretty simple one. So the thing that's going to stimulate insulin the most is going to be a rise in blood sugar. And what causes our blood sugar to rise the most and the most quickly or the most rapidly is going to be refined carbs. So any of those refined starches or sugars. So your best bet is probably to, if you are experiencing some of these symptoms and you feel like maybe you have some insulin resistance developing, would be to try and avoid those as much as possible. Which is pretty good because they usually come in processed food. And if you can avoid those as much as possible, that's just a good recipe for better health. Another thing that I think is really important is that we've gotten in this habit that it's totally normal to just eat all day long. Like you know, there's no meals. It's just like constantly grazing, eating, constantly digesting. And when we eat, unless our meal was like pure fat, it's probably going to stimulate our insulin a bit. And so if we think we have breakfast and that peaked our insulin, and then before we can even come all the way back down to where we would burn our fat, we bump it up again with the snack, and then we have lunch, and then we bump it up again with our afternoon snack. And so if you're constantly eating throughout the day, you have basically this whole period of time where you bumped your insulin up at least above where it's going to access the fat. And so I think another really simple thing is to cut out the snacking. And you don't even have to cut out like the amount of food you're having in a day, but just put it into distinct meals. Like, and then if you're like, oh, this is too much food, then you go, yeah, like if you have a filling meal, and that meal should last you until your next meal. And if it doesn't, then you need to look at that meal again and be like, what in that meal wasn't satisfying enough? And that's like two of the biggest things, honestly.
Yeah, those are great tips. And I use those too. And a lot of people will say, you know, I try to stop snacking, but I can't because I get hungry. And so exactly what you said, you have to look at the previous meal and say, okay, what was missing? Usually you need more protein and more fat, or one of the other, one of the two. Yep. Protein is the most satiating macronutrient, so it has to be there on your plate. I see a lot of women with a fear of red meat. And I find personally, I'm just a person, and not everyone is built like me. So some people are not going to agree with this. Like, I'm the person who likes the fattier cuts of steak and eats just heavier meals. And if I had yesterday, I had dark meat chicken on a salad, and I put avocado and olives and olive oil, and I made sure I had good amount of fat on there. And I knew that even though it was like a huge salad, 2 hours later, like clockwork, I'm like, oh, I'm freaking hungry. I knew this was going to happen. I can't be sustained on something like that. I need something that's like red meat, lots of fat, I need heavy meals. And for so many, especially I say women, because we're so trained to eat, you know, the salad with the chicken and the olive, the olive oil. And that doesn't work for me. And so I'm giving you permission to like delve into, you know, get the steak, get the burger, you know, take the bun off, but like put the avocado on it and a bacon and an egg and, you know, like dive into something like that.
Yes.
And eating, if you eat a huge amount in a meal, it's going to take you a while to burn that. And like you said, that is going to be so much better for your insulin, blood sugar, and digestive system, and your overall energy and your ability to heal and, you know, burn fat and do all the wonderful things that we've been talking about. And it really comes down to having these bigger meals and putting on your plate more than you think you might be used to.
Exactly.
And when you take out these dense carb sources too, you don't get that sickly full feeling as you do when you eat. Like if I were to add a potato at the end of, you know, that burger example that I just gave, or like, I feel stuffed, you feel uncomfortably full. Mm-hmm. But when you take out those really huge portions of these dense carbs, you eat and you feel full, but you feel satiated, you feel good. And it's like, oh, wow. It makes you not think about food for the next few hours, which is the most liberating thing for a lot of us. Yeah. Who, you know, you try intuitive eating. I bet the whole time you're thinking about food, you're calorie counting the whole time you're thinking about food. It's finally when your body's like, oh my gosh, I can finally stop thinking about food. It's so liberating, right?
Yeah. You don't even realize that you're not thinking about it anymore. You're like, oh, wow. Like, whereas normally it would have been like, okay, in 30 minutes, I'm going to go get myself a snack. Okay. In 10 minutes. Or like, if I get myself a snack, then I'll work out later to like balance it out. Like all that, like negotiating with yourself.
Constantly.
It's, like, oh, it's so free, like freeing when you don't have that in your brain. You can just like focus on what you want to focus on.
Totally. I always talked about it as these like bargaining with my sugar dragon. It's like, okay, you can have one piece of this now. Okay. If I'm in the grocery store, it's like, okay, you can have one thing, but it can't be something that you could eat the whole thing of. So it has to be small. And maybe I can just get this because I'm going on a trip. And it's just, I'm just bargaining with my sugar dragon all day long.
Insane.
And it is, we don't realize how exhausting it is until it finally turns off and you're like, oh, I get to think about a lot of different other stuff now. This feels pretty good. Yeah. And you're just, like you said, you're immersed in your work. And it's like, did I forget to eat lunch? And it comes to that point where, you know, I've heard people talk about this, that they forgot to eat lunch. I thought they were making it up or showing off or something, but it can actually happen when you fuel your body right. And it turns out that that is so much more. I mean, I'm into being productive because, you know, I have a business and I want to be productive in my business. So that's an important quality that I want. I want to be able to focus on my work. I want to be able to have these stable moods. And when you eat in this way and your body is supported, it leads you to be able to do these things effortlessly. So I love talking about the time restricted eating where we're not eating all day long. We're not grazing. A CGM, a continuous glucose monitor, makes you really accountable to this,
well,
right?
Sure does.
Do you find that? So,
oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about your CGM experiments, because I know that you're from Canada and you tried the Canada's diabetes recommended diet.
Oh my gosh.
So there for this, these stories. Tell me about that experiment.
Yeah. So I thought it would be interesting to try out, Diabetes Canada had this meal plan. They had a bunch, but they had this, one meal plan, and I had my CGM on, and I thought, oh, well, it would be really interesting to see, because this whole diet or this whole nutrition plan should be based on balancing my blood sugars. So, you know, according to them, like my normal way of eating is doing everything wrong. Like I'm not snacking, I'm not having like starchy carbs at every meal. So, you know, I should see what this diabetic meal plan will do for me. And I'm not, you know, I'm not diabetic. I've been working on my insulin sensitivity for like years now. So I was like, okay, like this should be fun. Oh my God. It was horrible. I think what was breakfast? It was two pieces of toast, cereal, skim, no
toast
fat milk.
And cereal?
It was two pieces of toast and cereal and a piece of fruit. And low-fat cheese. Oh, what else was it?
And an apple?
That was it. That was the breakfast, I think.
Okay.
It's so horrible. But then, okay, like it was like you were saying, like after I finished that meal, I was full because like it was a lot of food
quantity.
At once. But it wasn't like I wasn't satisfied. Like that is satisfaction you feel when you've stimulated those like satiety hormones is so much different than when you're just using the like volume button.
Yeah. The stretch receptors in the stomach.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just like, oh, like I'm full, but I feel gross. And then it was like, well, 2 hours later, it's time for my snack. And I was just like, oh
my gosh. And you had to eat again.
What was my snack? It was like more fruit and like low fat cheese and like a glass of skim milk, because why not? Let's have some more skim milk. And then yeah, the whole day it was like my blood sugar, the readings, it was so up and down. Like it was insane, especially after that breakfast. Like it was horrendous. And I'm like, who in their right mind thought that someone who can't tolerate carbs very well, aka a diabetic, could handle this meal plan at all? Like at all. Like it actually blows. It made me angry. Like by the end of the day, I was like, this is actually like this is the problem. People are coming to you for help and you're giving them this meal plan and it's making them worse.
Yeah.
And it's not their fault. They're probably trying to do the best they can. And you're just giving them terrible, terrible advice. And yeah, it just made me so upset. It's just like, this is,
Yeah, it feels terrible. That's where I start to get really, I feel like I get so enraged by the advice that's out there, because people are just trying to listen to the advice that's out there because they want to feel better and the advice they're getting. And then they come to me and they're like, I've tried everything. And it's like, you've tried all the wrong things that I'm so sorry that you were just completely misled. And it makes people feel so hopeless that they're doing something wrong, that their body is broken. It's like, you can't heal on this. A carbohydrate intolerance is what insulin resistance really is. And so you're having cereal, toast, skim milk, and a piece of fruit, did you say?
Yeah. And a piece of fruit.
That's
all in one meal.
Four very refined, like three really refined carbs. And then another piece of fruit on top of it, which has more sugar in it. I can't even imagine what that would do to my blood sugar. I feel like I kept telling you, thank you for doing this. You're so brave. I can't believe you're sacrificing your body like this.
Oh my God.
And meanwhile, this is the advice from health professionals. And it is honestly criminal. I feel like it is so criminal. If people knew how the body worked, if someone just listened to this podcast and had the most general basic understanding of insulin and blood sugar, and yet the diabetes, you know, people that corporations and whatever CDC, whoever it is that are in charge of this, our governments telling people who are obviously just so in bed with the food companies there. It's, I mean, what is that meal sponsored by subsidized wheat and dairy, like, and soy?
No, literally.
It is. It's so crazy. So it's really infuriating, and it makes my heart go out to all the people who are just trying to feel better. And then that's when you get people saying that this is a progressive disease. It's only progressive if you keep eating in a way that's going to progress it, but it can progress the complete opposite direction. And I had, I was talking with a friend of mine, Jessie in Chaus Bay, who's glucose goddess on Instagram. And she was saying, she posted about type 2 diabetes. And we were saying, you know, a lot of people really get upset when you say that type 2 diabetes is reversible. And we were kind of talking about, why would people get upset when you tell them this great news? And it's like, they have doctors and people telling them all the time that this isn't reversible. And then they try the advice, and they try the advice to make it better, and they do what you did, and they get worse. And so they're like, how dare you tell me I could get better, because my doctor, who they hold in high esteem, is telling them that it's not reversible, and they've tried all these things and they just don't think it could work for them. And that's a really hopeless place to be.
It is. And like, it just makes my heart hurt, because it's like they've taken this idea that having a high fat diet will cause heart disease. And then they're like, well, this will also apply to diabetics who, you know, suffer from heart disease, so they can't have fat at all. But it's like, no, like, their system can't run on carbohydrates well. So like, the fact that you have this flimsy, like, fat is going to cause heart disease should not be transferring over to this other condition. Like, I don't understand. Like, it just should be like common sense. Like, their blood sugar is high. Guess what? We have to put less sugar in their system. We need to use a different fuel.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just like, this is like debunked by now, guys. Like, the fat is not going to cause the heart disease. Like,
Yeah. And I heard something from Nina Teicholz, who I'm sure, you mentioned that you know her work. And she was saying that every member of Congress in the US is sponsored by a pharmaceutical company. And many of them have corporate, like, big food sponsors as well. And there are about 7 or 8 members of Congress that I've heard of that even do keto, that do a high fat, low carb diet. And one of these guys is from a wheat state. And so, you know, that there's just such conflicts of interest when you, if you were to tell people that they need to lower their carbohydrates, because that's going to hurt the wheat industry. And so this is all driven by corporate interests, by money, by the pharmaceutical company, by these big food companies. They're the ones who are making these recommendations. They are the ones who are sponsoring these dietetics programs that you are going to go into, that I'm so happy to hear that you didn't. And so you go to a doctor and they send you to a nutritionist, and this nutritionist is getting the same training as these doctors, and they're being taught by university programs that are sponsored by Splenda and General Mills and Kellogg's and Coca-Cola. I mean, you can look this stuff up. Those are some of the past sponsors. Even Bayer, which is Monsanto, like GMOs. That's why they're saying, that's why they love the message intuitive eating. They love the message all foods can fit, because it's just allowing you to have smaller portions of their toxic, addictive, quote unquote, food. And then we wonder why we're not healthy and why we can't get better. And it's just so upsetting. That's why I think you and me want to expose this stuff, and because really want to get better. And we don't have those interests. So we want, our interest is helping people get better. So it's really frustrating because we're up against, you know, these people who have billions of dollars who are running the show. And it's really hard to get people to unlearn a lot of this information that they take to be fact.
Oh, for sure. And then you walk around the grocery store and like so much of it exactly is like all coming from like the same three things. Like it's all wheat and soy and corn. And it's like, unless you're looking for it, like you don't realize like, oh, I have all these things to choose from. And like, oh, this one on the front is saying that it's a healthier option, that'll lower my cholesterol, this or that. So it's like, unless you're really interested and like you want to spend all your time reading about it, which like I do, but I understand that a lot of people don't, like it can be really confusing. And like, you hear one person saying one thing and another person saying another. So you're like, where do I go? Like,
yeah,
it's so confusing. And yeah, like it can be so hard to, I don't know, you have all these choices. And so you're trying to make the best choices that you can, but you don't have the right information, or like you think you have the right information. So I don't know. Yeah. It makes me really like disheartened because I know so many people are actually trying, like they're really, really trying to like eat the healthy things and like do better. And they're just feeling worse and worse and worse. And it's just because they're given terrible information. So even if they don't have diabetes or something, like they're still being given like terrible information for just general health. And so like, it's like 10 years down the road, like, oh, now you have a chronic disease. Like, oops, like, oh no. Like, yeah. Wish we could have helped with that, but we didn't.
Right. Yeah. And they're not even, you know, in medical school, they're not trained to look at any sort of prevention. And so that we're just labeling things when they get into a disease state, and that's not helpful. So it's, you know, when we talk about insulin resistance and issues with blood sugar and insulin, the statistic is that like 88% of adults are metabolically unhealthy. So over 88% of people out there have issues where their insulin's already, you know, blocking the fat burning, blocking the glycogen breakdown, and causing the body to stop accessing its stored energy. And that's leading to this terrible dysfunction. And it becomes our new normal. Hangry is glamorized. And America runs on Dunkin'. It's like, no, run on your own body fat instead.
You know, literally. I know. I feel like one of my biggest, not pet peeve, honestly, but it's people like, oh, like, what's the best healthy snack? And I just want to be like, just stop snacking. Like the healthiest snack is to not have a snack. Like we've now just trained ourselves that snacking is a part of our like dietary plan. It's like, okay, this is new. Like we need to have perspective that this idea that we can just snack all the time is very, very new. Yeah. And so you don't need to have a healthy snack. You know, if you're like crashing really hard and you're not at that place where your metabolism is there yet, then okay. Yes. Like have a snack, have something that's real foods, have some nuts or something, but the goal should be to not have to snack. And so it's like, I don't want to give you healthy snack ideas because like, I'm not trying to promote that idea. Like, I don't think you should snack.
See, like, just this is why, this is why you're on the podcast, because I totally agree. So I have a post that says, there's no such thing as a healthy snack. Change my mind. And
I bet people hated that so much. Oh,
like, yeah. It's very triggering.
Taking away my snacks.
Yeah. And so I'll say in my coaching programs and to my clients, I like to even take the word snack out of the vocabulary, because if you think of healthy snack, what is your mind going to? It's going to carbohydrates. So maybe you'll think, oh, an apple is a healthy snack. Well, that's a naked carb. It's going to raise your blood sugar, raise your insulin. It's going to block your fat burning, and it's going to make you hungrier. It's going to give you cravings. So no, it's not a healthy snack, right? An apple could be a better choice in a certain context, but we can't use the term healthy, right? When we're thinking about that. And then if we're not thinking about a fruit, we're thinking about some sort of packaged food. A snack is not
a snack food.
Yeah. A like snack whatever food. That is. Yeah. And what I like to say instead, especially as you mentioned, some people aren't going to be able to just do three meals yet. I don't want people to do that if you're having these crashes in between, if you're crashing at night. That's a sign that you need to eat more often at first to stabilize your blood sugar levels, to help your adrenals, because when your adrenals aren't healthy enough, you can't go really long between meals. You just can't yet. So we need to find this balance, right? So I like to use the term mini meal instead of snack. Of mini meal, my mind is going to a balanced plate. I'm thinking carbs, fat. I'm thinking like fats and proteins and maybe some vegetables. Mm-hmm. So if you have a mini meal, maybe you pack yourself a giant lunch and you save a portion of it because you know that you can't make it to dinner. Just have a little bit of whatever you have left. So it doesn't need to be, we need to think of snack foods, just eat the same thing that you would eat at a meal. You have that same ratio, that same blood sugar stabilizing effect. That's not going to be spiking insulin. It's going to keep you really satiated. And it's just, you're almost changing your mindset from a snacking mindset to I'm using this, how much can I fuel, how far I need to go in the day, right? So it's a whole new mindset. I love that you brought that up. And let's talk about, so we talked about the strategies to help insulin. We want to stop spiking blood sugar. We want to stop grazing and snacking and picking on food all day long. Mm. And let's talk about different movements and workouts and what kind of fuel that they might help us, you know, use up or whatever. So let's talk about exercise, because I know that comes up a lot and can be really helpful for insulin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think this is another big one, like a big trap that a lot of women get into. They're like, okay, I'm going to do the get healthy thing. So they start calorie counting. And then they also, this is probably the first thing they do. They're like, I'm going to start working out a ton. And I know I was this way too. It's like, okay, the harder you push yourself, the more calories you're going to burn. So obviously that's going to like slim you out faster. But what we don't realize is that because our body has these two fuel systems, like our fat is more like a low, slow intensity fuel. And so when we're going about our daily life, like we should be using fat as our main fuel. And that reaches up to a certain point, but then once we hit a certain intensity, it flips over to our body using more and more glucose because it's more of like a fast, powerful fuel. So all of these women are doing these like high intensity workouts like multiple times a week, and they don't realize that all you're doing, one, is burning up sugar and then training your muscles to only want to burn sugar. So it's like where you think you're like, oh, because I'm sweating a lot, like I'm burning up the fat. All you're doing is training your body to run more and more and more on glucose. When like, if you actually worked less hard, if you just like went for a walk, like, or like you went for a light jog, depending on your fitness levels, like you would actually be training your muscles to do the thing you want it to do, because you're trying to lose fat. And so we need our muscles to use fat, but if they're only running on sugar, like how are you ever going to lose your body fat? Like, this idea of the two fuels, like I'm obsessed with it, because like, it's just like, it makes so much sense. Like if you can't burn fat, I don't understand how you're going to lose it.
Yeah, that is fascinating. So things like walking, lifting weights, and lower intensity exercises. I like muscle building activities too. So that's where the weight lifting comes in. I find that if I do these muscle building activities, that's like, you're creating a sink, a place for the glucose and the insulin to go. So you're creating a bigger bank to put it in so you can get away with a little bit more, and that stabilizes your levels and you feel better.
I call them like my glucose sponges.
I love that. I love that. We're going to be sharing all our lingo. That's so good.
Yeah. All the analogies.
Yeah. So the glucose sponges. Yeah. So building muscles, and just going for walks, timing it right after your meal. I mean, amazing way to get your body into more of a fat burning state. So we talked about slowly increasing your fat, so your mitochondria, the machinery inside of your cells can recognize, oh, okay, this is something else I could use for fuel. Let's get used to this. It needs to practice a little bit. So we're slowly ramping up our fats, but then also doing these activities that are going to teach the body again, like, hey, you can use fat for this. So I find that a lot of my people with reactive hypoglycemia, because it's a big population of the people I work with, their blood sugar is dropping even during exercise that's, let's say, going for a walk. Mm-hmm. And so to me, I'm wondering if, and tell me what your thoughts are on this. Do you feel that that is indicating that their fat burning is so impaired that they're sugar burning, even doing a light exercise, or is it not that simplified?
I would say if their blood sugar is their blood sugar crashing, or is it just like slowly going down?
Well, the crashing is what I find is that it's perceived at even normal blood sugar levels. So more of this, so they experience it. So whether or not it's fully going down into like the, you know, 50s, 40s, like super low, it's they're in healthier ranges and they're still experiencing these issues. So it's going to be different for everybody, but I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. What I would say is like, I think seeing the blood sugar go down as you're like doing a lower intensity exercise, if you're walking or something, like that would be a sign that the muscles are using the non-insulin dependent, like, method of getting the sugar in. Okay. And so if you were insulin resistant, if you did have a higher level of insulin, then this would be a good thing because we're using a method to lower our blood sugar. That's not increasing our insulin and like furthering that cycle. Right.
Okay. That's
so it's
great.
Like, if we do see the blood sugar going down, then I would think that's a good, if it's low intensity, then I would think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as we start seeing the blood sugar go up with exercise, we know that we've like hit that kind of like stressful exercise, like not a bad stress, but like, it's like ramped up our system to where we're probably switching over to using glucose. So it's kind of like a good measure.
Oh, that's a great measure. So, yeah, I think that for the fat burning exercises, you're right that if I do go for a walk, it does lower my glucose. So I think that some people are just at a level where they can't tolerate that low of glucose. And so, that just comes to that internal, dysfunction that they have going on. But yeah, so certain exercises like HIIT exercises will raise your glucose. And that's for someone with reactive hypoglycemia, you don't really want to get into a place that does that because that's the adrenal component. So that's where the adrenals are coming in and they need to create this blood sugar to, or would it be the liver dumping glycogen? I think it's more
like the adrenals related. Would like tell the liver to dump the glycogen basically.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So it still is adrenally related because it is a stressor. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Like even though it's a healthy stressor, like obviously exercise is a healthy stressor. It's like the same thing. We want it to come in bursts, like a burst of healthy stress and then be done. We don't want to like be constantly like pressing that button. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think I like to think of exercise as a pyramid, like your daily movement, you're walking around, like that should be like the last thing that goes. Like if you're having a stressful week and you can't get anything else in, like the, like you should still be able to get in your walks and your daily movements. And then if you have time and you have the motivation, then yeah, you do the strength, you do like the muscle building to build up that capacity. And then if you have the time and you're managing your stress, then you add that like high intensity component on the top of it, right? As like an extra bonus, but that shouldn't be like your go-to, like I'm going to do this multiple times a week. Like the more I sweat, the better. Like, no,
if love the pyramid
and you needed to train that, then yeah. Like, I just think we need to train what our goals are. Like if you're an athlete and you need to work at that high intensity very frequently, then you should be training like that, you know, at that intensity. But if you're just a regular person, like you're just like, I just want to like lean out a bit and feel good and feel awesome, then like going for like a brisk walk is going to help you so much more if you can do that regularly than like pushing yourself like on the treadmill at the gym, like, oh, no, thank you.
Yeah, for sure. So good. There's so much good information here and I'm sorry I cut you off, but I am obsessed with that pyramid of the movement because it's such a great way to think about it. I'm very visual. So it's like the analogies that you're using are right there.
Like
so
you have to get rid of stuff, like start at the top and then work
start
down.
At the top. Just, you really want to get the base of that pyramid. So if you have no fuel in the tank, you're not going to the gym to do a HIIT workout. This is also directed at me who I need to pause my membership at this F45 gym. I had to take an hour nap yesterday. I love the exercises, but there's not enough rest period. So my heart rate is just up the whole time. And for a person who's physically fit, who has great adrenals, isn't, you know, creating a business and, you know, supporting a family.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of other stressors.
Yeah. It's not bad. Right. So I want to work to a place where I can get there, but at the moment I need to work on the movement and then the muscle building with lots of rest in between. So I don't tap into my adrenals and further stress them, because exercise is a stressor. It's a hormetic stressor, and we want the body to adapt and become stronger. But if you stress an already stressed body, it will get weaker. Yes, that's why I had to take a rest for an hour yesterday. So it made my body weaker, even though it felt great after I did it. But that's all that adrenaline, like you're running on adrenaline, and then your body is depleted of that over time. So today I'm going to do a walk. I'm going to rest. Yes. I'm going to go hang out in the bottom of that pyramid. So thank you so much for sharing. Is there anything else that that we missed when it comes to insulin? Any last tidbits you have in your mind? Or
I don't know if there's anything we missed. I feel like there's like, it just relates to like every aspect of life. So it's like, you can go down any rabbit hole that you want to. But I mean, I think those, if someone could implement those certain things, like reducing refined starches and sugars, like trying to eat distinct meals instead of snacking, and then exercising in a way that isn't causing excess stress, like you said, then like, that's like 85% of the game. Like you're pretty good.
Yeah. And what would be some like hidden things that, you know, maybe are insulin drivers? So we mentioned that carbohydrates raise insulin the most, but what would be maybe some other things that people don't really realize that might affect their insulin?
I think actually like stress, like even psychological stress, that's something that, I never paid much attention to. I was like, you know, whatever, like you just think, cause it's so mental, it doesn't have a physical component. But like when I had that CGM on, normally I'm just riding in my like nice little green zone, like looking good. And then I had my first day, like the first day of my semester back at school. And I was like, like all these deadlines, like I was really, really stressed and I could feel it. And I looked at my blood sugar and it was like 1.5 millimoles, like above where it normally is. Like it was totally out of the range the entire day.
Wow.
And if I didn't have the CGM on, like I wouldn't have realized that. But it's like, oh, if you're riding with that high blood sugar every day, it purely from stress, like I was like fasting the same as I had the other day. And it's like, people don't realize that that stress has a physical effect.
Yeah.
And like, you know, that can also lead, like that can contribute to like insulin resistant development and like diabetic development. Like it's a huge component. And so like, it's very motivating to be like, okay, you need to actively work on your stress management. You need to take a walk or something. Right. Like,
yeah,
because like that has the same physical effects as if I had eaten like a muffin or something. It was crazy.
Totally. Yeah. And that's a great one. So stress is such a huge contributor to dysregulation of blood sugar and insulin. And I think that that'll be a good podcast episode for me to do next on strategies to get, because people are like, well, how do I reduce my stress? I can't change XYZ. But I talk about getting your body on purpose in a relaxing state, in a parasympathetic state, activating your vagus nerve and getting outside and getting in touch with nature, all these things that we need to get back to. So yeah, that's such great info. Did you want to share something about that?
Of the stress piece, like there's kind of like three kind of pathways you can kind of like try to hit it at. So you can try to reduce your stress, like stress reduction. So if you can avoid certain things that are stressful, like over-exercising or the blood sugar spikes or having a poor night's sleep, like do that. So that's one pathway. And then there's stress management. So that's all the things we think about, like the walks and the baths and
yoga.
I don't know. I like fiddle around on my ukulele. Like,
yeah. And then what's the third?
The third is stress perception. So
ooh.
Yeah,
I love this.
This is something that I've only been working on like very recently in the past year, but like this, the event can be the same, but how your body perceives it, like how you react to that same event, will also affect like the physical effects of that stress within you, right? So like if two people are in a traffic jam And one person's like, oh my God, I'm going to be so late to work, like this and that. Like, they're just going to be like bathing themselves in like stress hormone and blood sugar. And if another person's like, well, I'm stuck here, so I guess I'll just listen to this cool podcast a bit more. And like, you know, there's nothing I can do. Like, if they can shift their frame of mind, even though it's, that's just a mental shift, like the event is the same. They're both stuck in traffic. They're both going to be late for work. One person is like, have their hormones going crazy. And the other person's like, well, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. Like, I get it. I see it. And like, I'm just going to make the best of it. And so I feel like that last one, like, oh, like,
I am obsessed. The things that shouldn't be
stressors, we make stressors for ourselves.
So good. So important. And I actually heard a TED talk on that a long time ago, years ago, and it stuck with me. And it said that they looked at two groups of people and they had similar amounts of stress, but they had different perception of their stress. And the people who didn't perceive that they had like, yeah, I'm stressed, but I'm not like stressed out about it. They had longer telomeres. And so that means that they had, like, they were younger physically because of, and just probably better health overall. So I love that idea of breaking it into the things we can control in terms of like the things we can, you know, bound, that's where a lot of boundary work comes in. What can I get rid of? You know, taking an honest inventory of things that are draining my energy. And then adding in the things that give you energy. So that would be the self-care stuff. And then that work on how you perceive it. So, so good. Oh my goodness. I love how your brain works. I like the, how you organize. Yeah,
I'm just always looking in triangles.
Yeah. Lots of triangles, but so it's triangles. So, yeah, it's so helpful. Especially for me, who's so visual, and it's a good way of organizing that information to make it more manageable in terms of what can I do? Because when it comes to stress, it's just, it's stressful, right? So it's like, it feels like a lot. It's like, oh my God, my stress is a lot. How am I ever going to get rid of it? So using a framework like that, you know, thinking about where your stress falls in that, and maybe I should make a little freebie for everyone listening to download so they can get a little diagram that they can fill in. Cause that would be really helpful. I feel like I want to do that too. Because this is something I'm actively working on in my life. Cause my adrenals are taking a hit.
The stress part is like the biggest one for me.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I still need to get better at it.
So. Yeah, for sure. Room for improvement, area of opportunity for all of us.
Exactly.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, and tell everyone where they can find you and what programs you have, cause you were mentioning them. So where can people hear more about you?
So you can find me at Live the Health Coach on Instagram. And so right now I have one-on-one programs. I don't have any available at the moment, but in a few months there should be spots opening. And so that's a 12-week program where we kind of like go through all of this. The whole idea is to get your body better at burning fat so you can, you know, feel good and just kind of like not think about food anymore. Just go about your business, live your life. Awesome. And then I also have a group kind of beta testing an online course version of this information so that people who don't need that like high touch kind of one-on-one stuff can just get all the information and then have all their questions answered through like a Facebook group or something. So that'll be available in April, I think. We're kind of like halfway through the beta test and it's going well. So it's exciting. Great.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So good. And so they'll find you on Instagram, and do you have a website?
Not right now. No.
Okay. All right. So we'll find you on Instagram, and I will link to that in the show notes. Awesome. Amazing. Well, yeah, thanks for coming on. I feel like we could have chatted forever, so we'll have to have you back on. Maybe when you finish school, if you want to share some extra fun things that you're learning about, I would love to pick your brain. So.
Oh, at the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, and we'll see you soon. Bye.
Okay.
All right, that wraps up the episode. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Health Coach Liv for coming on the show. You can find all her information in the show notes. Make sure you go check her out. Her Instagram is incredible. I have told her multiple times I get jealous of her content because it's so good and I wish I had thought of it first. So she's got really great visuals, and as you can see from her stress pyramid and the exercise pyramid, she thinks very visually. So her graphics are really easy to understand and help you make sense of this very confusing topic that is blood sugar and insulin. So thank you so much for watching, and remember to hop on the waitlist for Blood Sugar Mastery. Enrollment opens March 21st, 2022. I will see you on the inside. Thank you so much for listening, rating, reviewing, sharing, and posting these episodes to your social. It really means so much to me. I read every single review. I repost every single share on my stories, and I love all y'all. Thank you for being here. See you next time.